The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I came up with this notion that politics and music flow parallel together forward through history. So the music you get is related somehow to the political environment that's going on.
Yes.
And in the song American Pie, the verses get somewhat more dire each time until you get to the end, but the good old boys are always there singing and singing Bye Bye Miss American Pie, almost like fiddling while Rome is burning.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was the great songwriter Don McLean talking about where the song American Pie came from. It's something that people have always wanted to know, right? 50 years ago, the song American Pie debuted. And Maggie, why don't you run a little bit of it for those who may not be familiar with this song. It debuted on American radio, of course, became not just a number one hit, but it also was ranked at number five on a list of 365 best songs of the 20th century. Here's part of it. Listen.
We were singing Bye Bye Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
Yeah, so that song, of course, is a classic. I mean, many of us grew up hearing that. It's an American iconic classic, really. It's the longest song ever to be ranked at number one. It was 8 minutes and 36 seconds long. When it first came out, it meant it took up both sides of a 45, RPM. Remember those little single records? Since it took up both sides, some radio stations only played one side. And many people have wondered, what is this song all about? What's the meaning of these cryptic lyrics? I've always wondered, is there a hidden Catholic meaning in the song? So we've invited Don McLean today to join us to celebrate the 50th anniversary of what is an American classic. It's great to have him with us today. Don, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here with us. I am sure you are probably sick and tired of that question, too. this song has been around 50 years. It's a classic. People love it. People constantly ask you that. And I just got to ask you, why? What is it about that song, personally, that people ponder the mystery of it? Are there hidden lyrics in this, or is there hidden meaning? I mean, many people believe it had to do with Buddy Holly's plane crash, or is it just a story of the decade in which you wrote it?
Well, people have tried to turn it into kind of a board game from the first minute that it came out, but it really isn't. And so I've never really participated in that. And what I tell folks is that I mentioned, James Dean by name. And if I'd wanted to call the king Elvis, I would have called him Elvis. Right. And if I'd wanted to call the jester Dylan, I would have called him Dylan. So I want them to be multiple meanings to these things. In the case of the king in the song, he has a thorny crown, and only Christ had a thorny crown. Right. So there are multiple meanings that I intended, but I also was having a lot of fun with it. I really didn't take anything that seriously. It kind of amazed me that over the years I would hear, they teach an English class and use this song, and I think it was pretty funny. But I'm just glad that I was able to give people some enjoyment and some entertainment with the song.
Yeah, I like the concept of having duplicity to the song. I mean, some people have, I know you were raised a devout Catholic. I'm Catholic. Some people wonder, is there a Catholic meaning there? You talk about the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. We know the song is also about the loss of innocence at the time.
No, there's biblical references throughout the American Pie album. Yeah. Crossroads is full of those kind of references. Sister Fatima, Babylon, of course, from the Bible. And there are other references as well. So that's all part of the of what I wanted to do with the album. One of the things that you may remember, there was a controversial philosophy that God is dead. Mm-hmm. And I forget what philosopher said that.
Nietzsche.
A very powerful remark. I never quite understood it. But so there's a kind of apocalyptic idea that I wanted to get across, but not in an obvious way.
So just lyrically,
kind of elliptical, you know, that's how I did it.
Yeah, just in terms of the music, I mean, there are certain classics from, you know, from that time period that just seem to survive the decades. What is it about this song that seems to resonate so powerfully? Is it the lyrics? Is it the tune, the melody? What is it you think that has made this one of American rock and roll classics?
I really don't know. I think that the story really seems, when you listen to the song, to go from innocence to evil.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of always the story, or it often is.
Yeah.
And I think that people resonate with that, because I think that that's happened in some ways in America. You know, as we've gotten away from sort of the Eisenhower era, when he warned us about the military-industrial complex, and now, you know, we have foreign wars and nobody ever talks about them. That's not going in the right direction. And so, you know, I think that there's been a move away from old-fashioned morality, the kind that sort of we were brought up with, and to a way of kind of nothing is nothing, and, you know, nothing means anything much, you know, nihilism of some sort.
Right.
And that's also not in the right direction. So,
I would tend to agree with you. No, I think you're onto something. And I remember reading that, you know, you sold the lyrics to your music, I think it was in 2015, the original manuscript sold at auction for, you know, $1.2 million. And then afterwards, everybody was asking these questions. They all, in all these interviews, they wanted to know what the song was about. And basically, in one of the pieces of audio that I either read or heard, you said the American Pie thing is about this nation heading in the wrong direction, that we're becoming less idyllic. And, you know, whether you consider that right or wrong, it's the song is really about morality in a sense. And I think you're right. That was 1971. It's 50 years later. We're celebrating this song. Where are we today? Are we worse than we were? Are we the same? Have things changed? How do you read the signs?
No, I think that you have to look at the stewardship of the human race over the planet. In these 50 years, we have, again, not gone in the right direction. You know, we're destroying the environment. We're destroying the oceans. We're destroying the animal kingdom. It's a sad thing to say, but it's true. These things are not getting better. They're getting worse. So in that sense alone, forgetting morality for the moment, we are heading in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great for people to all of a sudden wake up 50 years after Earth Day in 1970, when we knew all this stuff was going to happen anyway, and say suddenly, oh, I'm for the environment. Well, it's too late. How about that?
Mm.
It's too late.
Right.
And we're going to live in a different kind of world because we didn't listen. But again, commercial reasoning and money and all the rest of it prevented us from making changes until now. It's so obvious that something's going on, but the horse is out of the barn. You know, you can't really close the door.
Yeah. Don, I know you were raised Catholic too, on another note. Where are you today with your faith walk? Are you still writing? Does your faith influence at all your life?
I believe in God, but I'm not religious. But I kind of think I'd be a Buddhist if I had a religion.
That's I'm sorry to hear that.
To me, the idea really is to be good to people and to do good in the world, and that's, I think, my goal. And I've written many songs and many albums, and I think that my interest in God comes through in different ways. I think certainly that any kind of talent that I have is not something that I gave myself. I feel that we... You know, if you're lucky enough to have a gift and be able to write songs, and you know, like I say, sometimes, you know, it's really almost impossible for a person to write a song. The average person could not even write a bad song.
Yeah, right.
They couldn't come up with any kind of melody or any kind of rhyme or any kind of idea at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a gift to be able to do this. And that's why there aren't that many songs and songwriters that do things that are remembered, because it's not something that everybody can do. And that's certainly a gift. And I certainly feel it's a God-given gift.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. There's a lot of great songs that are out there, that some of the, you know, Hey Jude, Yesterday from the Beatles, or Let It Be, Stairway to Heaven. So often the authors of those songs felt that it was inspired from another source. When you write your music, how does it come about? From your heart? Do you feel it comes from some other place?
I don't really know. I've never figured out how I do what I do. I just do it sometimes, and sometimes I don't do it. But I don't really, I didn't go to music school. I can't read music. Right. I can't write music. Cool. But I hear music in my head, and, you know, I just hear the song, or I see the song, and I write the lyrics, and I try to express what it is that I'm seeing in a visual way.
It's definitely a gift.
But I do believe in God, and I want to make that very clear. And one of the things that I realized is that people's basic understanding or belief in right and wrong, and people's belief in justice and fairness and all that, where does that come from?
Right.
You know, without some kind of presence of some kind of larger entity, we would all just feel free to kill each other or to steal everything or to do whatever we wanted to do. But there's a higher calling, and that's justice, and it's equality and fairness and all those good things that cause us to make the laws that we make in order to keep our civilization reasonably civil. Because, and that's got to come from somewhere. That's not something that just happened by accident.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking today to Don McLean. He's the author of that famous song, American Pie, and many others. You might be very familiar with another one he wrote called Vincent, Starry, Starry Night, which is also a big hit. And Don, I don't even for a couple moments. Maggie, play this very quickly, just part of it, so people understand it and maybe give some context to what we're talking about. This is Vincent, Starry, Starry Night.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul.
So I think you probably recognize that tune as well. Let me just ask you, because I know we talk American Pie, it's probably the biggest song. Which of the two is your favorite personally? Or neither, maybe?
Of the songs I've written?
Yep.
Well, I would say that I'm lucky enough to have the best songs I've written be the most famous songs that I've written.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you have some songs that a person can be known for that aren't all that great, and they may have done other things that are better, but they're not known for those things. So always my best work was always my most famous.
I love it. Well, it's a gift from God. Clearly, you're talented. God's given you a great gift, and it's been a delight to talk to you. I know you for a few more moments. I just want to, I know you're raised Catholic, and I'm a Catholic. I find a lot of a lot of solace, comfort, and direction in the faith, especially the sacraments of the faith, the Eucharistic confession. And I'll be praying for you. I know God's a big part of your life. I know our listeners can be praying for you as well. And I invite you to check out the Catholic Church again. I think it's a lot different than maybe what may have caused you to stray away from it. But I'm grateful for your time and for your music and for your witness and for not being afraid to talk about God and our responsibility. So thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I love it. You're welcome anytime. All right. Look forward to catching up again. God bless you. That's
thank
Don
you.
McLean.
Good luck
to
you.
Of course, they... Thank you. Thank you very much, Don. And like I said, anytime, you're more than welcome and invite you to check out the church. I think you're going to be glad you did. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. I do have to take a short pause here. Do me a favor. Say a prayer for Don. Of course, that's a classic. Next time you hear it, I know you'll think about the wonderful work that he has done. And American Pie, of course, Starry, Starry Night, another classic. And he's got albums full of work. And what he said about how God gives you talent, I believe that. I love the fact he doesn't write music, doesn't know how to read that. It's just a gift. And we got to thank God for the gifts we have and certainly use them. I'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more about rock music right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, welcome. Good to be with you today. I thought we would follow up with our conversation with Mr. McLean, you know, author of American Pie. It is a good song. I enjoy it. You may have loved it as well. 8 minutes and how many seconds? 36, 46 seconds long. It's a long one. Great song. It's. I think about rock music sometimes, and I love it. I grew up on it. I know a lot of people have a problem with that. I have a producer who only listens to classical music. That's not Maggie. Maggie, what do you listen to? Open your mic if you could. What kind of music do you listen to?
Oh, I grew up listening to classic rock. On my dad's side, mom definitely loved Motown, and so I kind of fell in between.
And then you lived in Tennessee, right? So you were
yes, yeah.
Little country, too?
Sure. Little country, little blues. That's really where my appreciation for blues and folk came in. Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a nice repertoire of music that you like to listen to. I think as you get older, your palate expands. You know, when you're a kid, you don't like Brussels sprouts. As you become an adult, I think they become more digestible, right?
Right.
And it's just, I think the same thing with music. You know, I grew up on rock. I'd never listen to country. I'd never listen to, and then actually, you know, I'm listening. That's a really good tune, you know, or classical or whatever. I mean, my spectrum of music is really vast. If anyone took my phone and went through my playlist, you'd be like, what? You listen to this? Yeah, it's kind of wild. Look at your playlist and see what you listen to. But, you know, kids do a lot for you, too. My teenage kids at the time and my college-age kids turned me on to a lot of new music. So, the repertoire expands. But, you know, rock music is something I want to talk about. And the reason I want to talk about it, just from a spiritual perspective, I'm not here to champion it by any means. I do think we have to be very careful about what we brush up against. I've talked about this in the past, about darkness, right? When you go to movies that perhaps glorify evil, is that good for your soul? Is it good for the intellect, the mind? Does that spiritual grit run off? Do certain songs have perhaps curses in them? Do they have a spirit of darkness attached to them? And I think we need a lot of discernment here. I've spoken previously about how the devil has infiltrated particular music in the 60s. I mean, there's been a connection to it. Some believe that before his fall, Satan was the high archangel of music. They drew from Ezekiel 28:13, where it says, the workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day that you were created. But whatever the case, you know, you know the devil's going to give you all the wealth, you know, and the prestige and the power of the world if you sign it over to him. He tried this even with the Lord. Remember when he tempted him in the desert? And Christ went and fasted for 40 days and 40 nights before he conquered evil, before he went to Calvary. And what happened? Satan, the great deceiver, tempted him with all of the pleasures of the world. So it seems, today there are some things we could look upon. Does Satan, in some respects, use music? Is there an occult attachment to some of the music that maybe came out of the 60s? I just think of some of the entertainers. You know, you got Jimmy Morrison, right? You got Jim Morrison of the Doors. Many people love the Doors. Great music, right? The problem with Morrison, and again, this was a weird era too, right? I mean, drugs were wild at this time, but he did ritual dances with a witch that he married. He also owned a bust of Aleister Crowley. You know, he was from the Church of Satan. He was the English occultist. He was born in the 1900s, and he had a lot of darkness around him. Crowley is considered to be the founder of the modern Satanism. And Morrison, like a lot of these rockers, he died in his early 20s. He died very young, very mysteriously, right? Jimmy Page, right? The man, a guitarist, you know? He was with he was with Led Zeppelin. And so devoted was he to the occult, right? And to Crowley. He actually purchased Aleister Crowley's old cottage on Loch Ness in Scotland. And I was talking to Don McLean a few minutes ago about this. You know, how do these things come to you? Do you get inspired? And a lot of artists say they come from other sources. Jimmy Page is one of the examples I was thinking about. He claims that, you know, and again, you bought a place where I think it had to be possessed or had to be demons around this place. You got a guy who founds the modern Church of Satan. You buy Aleister Crowley's cottage on Loch Ness. He said the greatest hit, and I love Stairway to Heaven. It's such a classic tune. He said it came to him as if by magic. As the music and lyrics flowed out of him, he says the co-writer at his college, he felt like the pen was moving by itself. His band, it was later said to be under a curse, as you know, if you know anything about your rock music there, they had accidents and early deaths. A stairway perhaps in the wrong direction, right? Perhaps in the opposite direction. And, of course, the Beatles. They are a great band, perhaps the greatest band of all time, and they changed music as we know it here in terms of rock and roll, and their music's still a classic. It's still classic today. On their landmark Sgt. Pepper album, it features, you know, little images, little pop-up icons of those that they admired. Guess who's on the album? You guessed it. Picture Crowley. In the title of the song, you know, on that album are lyrics. You know, it was 20 years ago today. Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play, right? Crowley died in 1947, 20 years before the release in 1967 of that hit record, which was said to have transformed music. So as Beatle fans, I'd say I'm a Beatle fan. I mean, very unnerving. And the list goes on. I could probably give you more. I'll give you one more. The Stones, right? Another classic group. You got Zeppelin. You got the Stones. You've got the Beatles. You got Page and Morrison. These are big names, right? Big time bands. 1967. Again, the Stones released an album called His Satanic Majesty with this song. Maggie, play a little bit of this. This is Sympathy for the Devil on it. All right, as Maggie cues that up. You know, you got Jagger, you got Jimmy Page. For a film about Crowley, that's what this was. They were scoring the album about. I think the connections were astonishing. On the cover, just like the Beatles, were hidden images of John Lennon and George Harrison. Listen to this. Here's part of Sympathy for the Devil.
Oh, hey.
So you get it. You know the song, right? I mean, these are classics. You know, these are classics. They come out of the same era. They have this occult underpinning to them. And you wonder what influenced it. Does that, from the Beatles to the Stones, you know, from, well, yeah, you can even go a little modern, too. You can go to Ozzy Osbourne, right? You talk about something with an occult overtone. You got Black Sabbath. One of his most famous songs was an ode to the dark occultist, right? Guess who? Crowley. What is it about Aleister Crowley? What is it about music? What is it about these bands and their affiliation to this? You know, of course, Crowley was accused of everything from drug use and pedophilia to death rituals. And his motto became the modern philosophy of the day. Do what you will. Do what you want. You know, be the whole of the law. Bowie referred to Crowley in a song that he had. And look, it goes on and on and on. When you think of the 60s, it was like a huge ritual in some respects. You know, you had drugs, you had free sex, and you had religion. Or not religion, rebellion, I should say. It was almost a religion. You know, it was like witchcraft in some respects. I'm joined today by Father Mark Barron. I wanted to bring him into the conversation because he and I have talked about rock music a lot over the years. And if you want to join us, you can dial in too. It's 888-914-9149. I just want you to think. I'm throwing things out to you right now. I just want to put this before you. You might say that's ridiculous. You're making big leaps here. Or there might be something more. And then it raises the question, should we be entertaining this type of music? Yeah, the lyrics might be captivating. They might be mesmerizing. They might be all-time classics. But are they something that we should entertain? And here to help give us some perspective on that is none other than Father Mark Barron. He is the, I believe, and I hope I get your title right, Father Parochial Vicar of Our Lady of Peace Parish in Darien, Illinois. I know it has changed a few times. Always good to talk to you, Father. Welcome back.
Great to talk with you again, Darien. It's great to be back on the show.
You know, we've talked about this a lot in a lot of different ways. I had Don McLean on American Pie, Pretty Innocent Song. And we reflected on what was unfolding, you know, 50 years ago. And at that time, you had some of these bands, you know, making their hits as well. I love your take on this. There's so much to dive into. Is it okay to listen to this type of music? You know, I love Stairway to Heaven. You know, some of these great classic songs that are out there, some of the Beatles tunes, some of the others that I refer to, Doors and Jimmy Page. What's your thought on this? Because, you know, I don't want to be too puritanical. But at the same time, I don't want to expose myself to things that aren't good and beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a matter of discernment and moderation. Discernment from the standpoint that we know that music affects us. It does. I mean, music, we are musical beings, and science is showing, through brain studies and all that stuff, just how much music affects us. It moves us emotionally. It affects us. It affects us physiologically. So it does affect us. And the question is it going to affect us for the good or the bad? And that's where kind of like the discernment comes down, because sometimes music can affect us in a negative way. Sometimes it can affect us in a positive way, like in a negative way. So from the standpoint, if we consider that, like, we are people who are wounded by sin, right? Original sin. So that means our tendency is for our flesh, like St. Paul says, our flesh to battle against the spirit. And the flesh kind of involves our emotional life, where we let our emotions or our sensual appetites get the better of our spiritual desires. That's the flesh versus the spirit. So because music especially has that ability to affect us emotionally, if the sound of music kind of affects us and stirs up those emotions in a disordered way, leading us to make bad judgments or bad decisions or leading to immoral behavior, then that's where we have to kind of watch it. But, you know, we know that there is music out there, such as like Gregorian chant, certain, you know, classical music, certain Christian music does this, where it really does dispose us towards the transcendentals, things towards goodness, beauty, truth, justice, you know, God ultimately. And so those are the things where music can order us towards virtue. And so this opens up a big, you know, conversation here, but it does involve a discernment where how does music affect us, especially when the nature of rock and roll it is to, you know, kind of represents more a form of rebellion. And if I can just read this quote from Billy Joel from, he said, listen, this is what Billy Joel said. This is from him. He says, music is essentially the manipulation of sound, which it is. It has the power to arouse, the power to frighten, right? That emotional effect. It makes people feel profane. And he goes, all the things they were saying about rock and roll in the early days, oh, it's going to subvert our youth. It is going to make them all want to have sex. It's going to make them all want to go crazy. And then he concludes this quote by saying, they were right. They were right. So, you know, again, he's just trying to express that music, specifically rock and roll music, you know, it has more of that tendency to kind of like stir the emotions in a non-virtuous way. And that's where it kind of like the discernment has to come in, to where when I listen to music, rock music, you know, I have to discern the sound. What is the sound doing to me? And then we definitely have to discern the lyrics, because the lyrics many times they can either be immoral. They can be meaning leading us, you know, speaking, glorifying immorality, or be anti-Christian, you know, antichrist, being blatantly demonic in itself, like in one sense glorifying Satan. So these are the things we have to kind of look at and evaluate as we you know, listen to secular music.
Yeah, my guest today, Father Mark Byron. If you want to join us, you can dial in now. It's 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at the impact of rock music on everything from society to us personally. Is it okay to listen to this type of music, and what are the pros and cons of it? Father, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll grab a few phone calls. You know, we're approaching the end of my broadcast today, and there's so much to get into. When I come back, we'll take a look at what scientists have also done when they study the effects of music. That and more coming up straight ahead. Feel free to join us, 888-914-9149. We'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester. Now that's a classic riff, isn't it? It's some really good music out there. Hey, if you're just joining us, we're taking a look at rock music. A little bit earlier in the hour, if you missed it, at Don McLean, the author of American Pie, a lot of other great songs too, Star Star Night, he stopped by. We talked to him about the 50th anniversary of that classic, and I thought it'd be good just to talk about rock music today, this whole genre of music, and we could go back into the history of it and how it came about, but what I find fascinating are some of the studies that have been done on rock music. Like one that was done, I'm going to pull this from my memory. I don't have the data in front of me. I should have looked at it, but it just came back to me. If I recall correctly, scientists did this study where they showed water, you know, when it was forming into ice, right? And they played rock music. And the rock music, when the ice crystals formed, came out with all sorts of cracks and deformations, if you will. The ice that was formed while they did the same exact experiment using classical music was formed with these beautiful crystals. They looked almost like snowflakes, right? We've seen this with plant life, rock music, heavy metal, acid rock, that type of stuff. You know, the plants don't seem to prosper as opposed to, let's say, classic music or something a little more beautiful. There was another study that looked at Asian beetles. You know, the bane of those who live in the Midwest when the fall comes, right? I know it can be a problem. I mean, how many aphids they eat from soybean plants when they hear you know, the different types of music, when they were subjected to country music and to folk music, right, they had no problem at all. But when they played rock music, hard rock, they cut their eating by nearly half. That's the power, the impact. Is it the vibration? Is it the frequency? Is it the nature of the music? These kinds of effects have been documented in all sorts of studies. I mean, plants dying, cows not giving as much milk if rock music is played. And if that's the way it is with plants and animals, what kind of impact does it have on you? What kind of impact does it have on me when we hear this and we are surrounded by it? You know, there was a recent survey that looked at music starting in the 80s, 1985, and they found that the lyrics today are getting sadder as time goes on. But there's also a spiritual thing. I do think sometimes spirits attach to certain things. I had Father, I saw Father Maggio. He's an exorcist out of Indiana who was on the program not too long ago. He was interviewed recently by somebody on a major outlet, and he really believes that concert, the frenetic pushing of the crowd, the nature of what took place, he believed that there were some symbols that were very similar to the occult that might have created or helped to exacerbate or foment what we saw there. And I'm joined today by Father Mark Barron. I want his take on all this as well. It's good to have him with us. He has expertise in deliverance ministry, of course, parochial vicar of Our Lady of Parish, Our Lady of Peace Parish in Darien, Illinois. Father, the Astro World Conference, where, you know, how many people now? 9 people, I think, lost their life there. It was crazy. I saw an exorcist on mainstream media talking about some of the cult symbols and imagery that he saw happening there. And he believes it might have been a demonic element to it. I'd love your thought on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's right on. I mean, I saw this article on the internet, and I know, you know, you got to be careful what you get on the internet, but they showed pictures. I saw pictures of just those occult elements. Like, for example, his stage was like, it was like a portal. And it was at the beginning of the concert, there was fire. So it was kind of like symbolic of this portal to hell. And people could say, oh, well, that's kind of reading into it a little bit. But we got more. So if you look at the stage, you know how sometimes the stage comes out into the crowd. The stage was kind of in the form of an upside down cross. And again, you know, was he intending it to be an upside down cross? Well, you know, there's something there. And then you have this notion of, like the stage was kind of like a portal into some other realm, and there was an eye that was looking out from the portal. Now, what's the significance of that? Is that, you know, you talked about Aleister Crowley, Drew. Yep. And Aleister Crowley, his big thing was to be a vehicle for Satan to usher in the age of the Antichrist. This was his thing, which is why for him, he saw the destruction of the family as a big deal in trying to usher in this age of the Antichrist, because he saw the family as a source of tyranny to this demonic plan. So anyway, he felt that music was a good way to bring in basically anti-Christian, or in one sense, really satanic values into culture. So anyway, the Egyptian god Horus, what was like this god of this bringing in the age of the Antichrist. And so the symbol for Horus is a triangle with the eye through it. And so you see that a lot especially in contemporary music. And you saw that present at this Travis Scott concert. And you also heard, I was reading this article, and they were speaking about this dark energy that was present at the concert. And you just had these themes of this notion of being led into this portal. Basically, it appears to be like this portal of hell, and then the Eye of Horus, kind of this occult imagery, kind of being this being seduced into this form of. You know, leading into this transformation of culture, of society, and even your very self, because even the shirt that Travis Scott had on was an image of this stick figure going through this portal and then emerging changed. And so, you know, again, it's for your discernment, but it appears to be or it's reasonable at least to consider that there was some serious occult imagery going on at that concert. And you can look at that reality within the context of just what a lot of the modern day music has been espousing anyway. They've been espousing these occult themes. Look at the Super Bowl, many of the Super Bowl performances. Look at Ariana Grande's music, Katy Perry's music, Keisha's music. There's a lot of rap music that espouses this. So, you know, again, it all makes sense. Why? Because Satan is real. Satan's a fallen angel. He's a musical being. He knows that we're musical beings. So he's going to try to, you know, fashion music in a way that is seductive and that leads us away from the way, the truth, and the life, which is Jesus. So that's
well said. And you're right. I was thinking about some of these Super Bowl performances. I remember Beyonce. You know, she often gives the finger salute of the devil's horns, and she channels supposedly this alter ego named Sasha Fierce when she goes into that personality. Her eyes turn black, they say. I don't know. I mean, you've got Jay-Z. I was reading somewhere where when played backwards on one of his songs, I think are the words 666 murder Jesus, you know, so. Yeah, who knows? I mean, there's always that stuff. If you play the song backwards, you're going to hear that. I don't know how true that is. But I do think that there probably are many of these celebrities who are, you know, they've rejected God. And unfortunately, they've turned to a dark reality. And I think sometimes that manifests there. Let's take a few calls, Father. We have about 10 minutes left together. Yep. If you want to get in, there's one line open at 888-914-9149. Michelle is in Northern Michigan. Michelle, hi. You're on the air with Father Barron.
Hi, Father. Great to talk to you. I just wanted to add something a little fun to the conversation. I remember when I was a little kid and the Beatles had come out, and my grandparents and my parents all thought we were all going to hell if we listened to that music. Because and he had left the car to go in and get something at the grocery store, and I had turned the channel on the radio to listen to the Beatles. And when Dad got back in the car, he was upset with me and turned it right off. And I said, "Why don't you like those, you know, this song? It's really fun." And he said, "These songs have the devil in them. And no, we are not listening to those. They repeat themselves over and over and over again." And I thought about that for just a minute, and I said to my father, I said, "Dad, do you know that we as Catholics, we repeat ourselves all the time? There's the Hail Mary, we've got this prayer, that prayer."
I love it, Michelle. I love it.
That's funny.
He was so upset response? With
me. That's awesome. Go ahead, Father. Thank you, Michelle.
No, I was wondering what his response was.
Yeah, Father wants to know what the response was, Michelle. What did your dad say?
He didn't say anything. He just couldn't, you know. How could he argue anything with that? And he just shut down, and that was it. Change the conversation.
But that's a great point you're bringing up, because it is true. Like, the repetition, you know, repetition is the mother of learning. But in prayer, you know, it has that positive effect of the repetition that we say in the Hail Mary. It has this kind of like contemplative element that opens us up and lifts us up to God, which is interesting because, music does the same thing, right? I mean, our church songs have refrains. Music has refrains, and that's where, you know, we just have to be discerning. And I'll just emphasize the word discerning, when we like the sound of a specific type of music, we become attached to it. We love the sound because it's pleasurable. And the danger with that is that if the sound of that music contains lyrics that is kind of poisonous in varying degrees, it can affect us in a way like a, for lack of a better word, kind of like a subtle brainwashing. And I'll share this story myself. Like, I grew up country music. I'm a country music guy. Yeah. I love country music, and especially the 80s, 90s stuff. But anyway, as I had my awakening to the faith, you know, there were certain songs, country music songs that I loved. And one song, like Garth Brooks, Call in Baton Rouge, that song was I loved the sound of it, but as I became aware, I'm like, wow, those lyrics are about like a one night stand. And so what country music, or if you will, the danger of country music is that it there's no genre that kind of makes sin sound so good, or like makes cheating and getting drunk and all this stuff sound so right. And so I had to be aware of that in myself, like, wow, I felt like in myself, I was kind of starting to, well, what's so wrong with that? You know, because emotionally, when you start feeling good about something, it's easy to start to rationalize like the morality of something. That's my experience, at least. So this is why, you know, I kind of like say we just have to be discerning about how music affects us.
I love it. Well, let's move along and take another call. Michelle, thank you for sharing that. James is listening in Fort Myers, Florida. Had a personal experience, I think, with Guns N' Roses. Hey, James, good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing today?
We're great. Thanks for calling.
Good. Well, basically, I started listening to Guns N' Roses. I really like Guns N' Roses. It's not about Guns N' Roses. Right. But it was about rock music and how I got into Guns N' Roses and Metallica. Back in the early, you know, around the early 90s. But my cousin, I had a family member that came over one time and had a tape. And on the tape, it had an upside-down cross. And it was actually a band called Unleashed. And basically, I was like, what the heck is that? I knew something kind of wasn't right about that. But he kind of, like, played it for us. There's all this growling on it, and we kind of just kind of poked fun at it. But later on, I think it was like the next summer, he came and stayed with us and he brought that tape. And then, for whatever reason, you know, I got kind of intrigued by it, made a copy of it, started listening to it, and had no idea the danger that I was putting myself in. And, started listening to it. And then eventually I couldn't get that out of my head, the song, the rhythm and stuff. I like the rhythm of it, this sort of rebelliousness of it. Yeah. And to make a kind of a long story short, when I got into high school, I had an unfortunate thing happen to me that didn't go my way, but I had made a tape of a radio station called The Pit, which was running heavy metal music in the middle of the night in Tampa, Florida. And that music was right there for me, ready and waiting to kind of like let out my anger, let out my rebellion. I was so angry about what happened in my life. I ended up going home a lot of times after school in high school, listening to Metallica songs over and over and over again, becoming more and more isolated. Yeah. And then eventually, basically, it just did a lot of damage where I was seeking out depressive type songs and angry songs and lyrics. Yeah. And I actually had a experience in deliverance ministry where I believe that I heard some satanic lyrics come out. The demons actually speak the satanic lyrics. And actually, I had experiences myself where I would get up around 3 in the morning, and I would hear those lyrics and those songs. So I want to put a warning out there that there's some of the music that's not blatantly satanic, like Metallica and things like that, but they can be gateway drugs into other things. And I remember I went to a music store when I was about 13, 14, I saw a beautiful cover, and it was a band called Morbid Angel. But on the cover had a little tiny bit up in the car, a little pitchfork and a pentagram on it. And I said, oh, you know, it's kind of seductive, you know? Right. But I liked the sound of it, but I kind of ignored the lyrics. But you can't, psychologically, it gets into your psyche, and whether you realize it or not. And I just want to share that there's a lot of damage that stuff did in my life. And I got to the point where I kind of overreacted, and I said, oh, I don't want anything to do with heavy metal or rock anymore at all. Right. Now I'm kind of like, I use discernment. I pray, I sort of ask God, you know, I sort of connect to the spirit, and I look at, like, James, what's really going on. Not all rock music is bad.
Yeah, no, and it's such a great point to leave us on. And first of all, what a powerful story. As you're sharing it, I often thought of some of these shooters, whether Virginia Tech or Columbine. Father, weren't they listening to the same type of music, some really hard, dark, heavy type of metal? I think that was kind of their music genre. I don't know that for sure. I'd heard that somewhere before, but The fact that it can be a gateway, you know, to lead to other things, or that music can be cursed, I think that's true too. Yep. But also, yep. I don't want to throw rock and roll totally out, because I do think it is a genre of music in which, you know, if it's used properly, can bring a lot of good and joy. Yeah, final thoughts from you, Father. I only have about a minute left.
Yeah, I just think, again, discern and moderate, you know, because even though, and I listen to some rock music too, but still, rock music, it by its nature, is not necessarily going to lead us to that transcendent place where we can really contemplate the goodness, truth, and beauty of God. So, yeah, it's fine. But again, discern, moderate, and, you know, all things seek the glory of God.
Father, thank you for being with me. We'll catch up again. It's always a delight. Yeah. I'm so grateful for
great
your
time.
As Father Mark Barron, say a prayer for him and his ministry. If you want to listen to this again, if you tuned in later, you missed it, go to my podcast. Maggie will have it up after our show. You can go to relevantradio.com. The keyword is the Drew Mariani Show. Have a great day.